Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is currently 6:15 on this chilly Thursday morning. I got confused. Yeah, I'm 6 days away from Christmas here. About, if you look at the temperatures throughout the area and average, and first of all, thankfully, no fog. That's the main thing, right? No fog. But if you look at the temperatures and average them around the area in the mid-50s, going up to 66 today, 64 tomorrow, 53 on Saturday, which is nice and holiday-ish, right? 57 on Sunday, but then 65 on Monday, 70 degrees on Tuesday, which is Christmas Eve, if my calendar doesn't deceive me, and then a 65% chance for showers, highs of 68 on Wednesday. So all in all, could have been better, but get together with your friends and your family, and everything will be all right. Forget the weather. Ramon Antonio Vargas joins us now, editor and publisher and reporter editor at The Guardian. And Ramon, again, I can't thank you enough for the work you do and all of the investigative reporters in Louisiana. And look, I'm not trying to relive anybody's pain or sensationalize anything here, but I think this Lawrence Hecker thing is a classic case study of everything that's wrong with the Archdiocese and the way that they handled this whole thing. And I think what yesterday proved, following your tweets as you were in the courtroom, was that these people, specifically Hecker in this case, hurt a lot of children, and they are still paying for that. The people are paying in terms of pain until this day, and the Archdiocese is yet to pay for it. But with that all said, good morning, Ramon. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Talk about
a very difficult day.
Yeah, I'm just going to turn it over to you, sir, and you can tell us all about it.
Yeah, yesterday was, I think, a day that a lot of people who Lawrence Hecker harmed or had harmed, it was the day that they were waiting for. And yesterday was the time that I guess it was a former student at St. John Vianney High School who pressed the who pursued the criminal case against him that resulted in him pleading guilty to child rape. Yesterday was his chance, first time that we heard him speak publicly. You know, I'd read details of his abuse as laid out by prosecutors and court filings, but yesterday was the first time I saw him get on the witness stand and direct himself to Lawrence Hecker. It was very impressive. Did not didn't prepare anything. Was guided through by a prosecutor, but I think that the way that he described that, you know, the lifelong effects really of kind of what he went through, which is, you know, he was assaulted at a church next to a school by Hecker, who then when he went to tell, you know, his principal. Told him that he would be expelled if he didn't get help for fantasy stories and angry issues. Mm. Obviously, the implication there being that he, you know, didn't believe you, or you know, if they did believe him, then we're gonna try to discredit you. And then really, I mean, I think that the thing that stuck out to me was, you know, Lawrence Hecker raped me, and my whole aspect of church changed, is what he said yesterday. And he says, I didn't trust anybody. I have zero friends. I pushed everyone away. And he described that even as he grew up, after he met his wife, after they had children, how even his relationships with them, he could never really kind of fully give himself over. This was something that I didn't really put in the story, but you know, I'll share with y'all. I know that one of the other things said is just as when he's doing something as simple as kind of like, you know, putting on underwear in a certain way, like he'll think of the assault even to this day, right?
And it happened when, Ramon?
That was in 1975. Excuse me?
The assault happened in 1975, and still to this day, it haunts him.
It does haunt him. And I'm just the idea of like when you're doing something as simple as just getting dressed, right? As like mundane as getting dressed, and how it still takes him back, you know, to that moment. You know, it was difficult to, I think that one of the harder the sights that was harder to stomach, just, you know, Lawrence Eckert didn't, you know, had the opportunity to apologize. At the same time, do I think that people would have accepted that apology? Do I think it would have been enough? No. Do I think that, you know, he certainly had the opportunity to at least kind of remove that talking point afterward? He did, and he chose not to do it. But there was a question at the news conference afterward, he's 93, and he seems to be getting worse every time we see him. Like, is he, did he follow, you know, did he understand what happened today? And was he listening? And I think he was. I mean, I think it was apparent that he was. He was sobbing and trembling and groaning at times that seemed to make sense. The more difficult times that
was
kind of the moments that were most. Yes, Hecker, the moments that were kind of most difficult to just watch from the courtroom gallery, you'd look over at the defense table and he was having appropriate reactions to that. So yesterday was difficult for it seemed like it was difficult for him to hear like the things that he had done, which is obviously the least that most people, you know, would expect him to have to endure. And so, yeah, obviously it was very difficult. And I think that there was, the takeaway was just the bravery that I mean, first the victim that I've described and the survivor that I've described, but then two others who also were ready to testify, who also spoke about, you know, the lifelong effects of their abuse at the hands of Hecker. I think everyone was, there was nothing you could really do other than to just admire like the bravery that it took to do that.
Let me take a break here, Ramon, and we'll pick it up when we come back. One thing that stood out to me in your story was that the judge was weeping out of sympathy for the abuse survivors. And these judges have heard a lot throughout their careers. The other thing is that having grown up here, I know that St. John Vianney, which is subsequently closed down, that was where kids went if they wanted to be priests. That's where young men went if they wanted to be priests. And also the details of how this actual rape and happened, you know, I didn't realize before that Hecker showed up unannounced in a weight room where the victim was working out, put a child in a wrestling style headlock, rendered him unconscious and raped him. And that's just beyond reprehensible. And the other thing that I can't get out of my mind is that these are just a few victims of one person. And we can talk about the magnitude as it relates to the archdiocese and really nationwide of how many victims there are out there, how many pedophile priests there are out there, not maybe perhaps currently, I don't know what's going on now, but just the systemic failure to protect kids. 6:22, more when we come back. Traffic now, WWL. 6:27, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with Ramon Antonio Vargas, who was in the courtroom, and Ramon, it had to be a tough day for you as well. He's the editor and a reporter at The Guardian. Was the sentencing of Lawrence Hecker. He got sentenced to life in prison. What happens now, Ramon, with him? Do you know?
One of the questions that we were trying to figure out is exactly where does he serve out the punishment, right? I think repeatedly on the program we've mentioned that he's been at a long-term care facility inside of West Jefferson Medical Center under armed guard. Does he stay there? Does he go to... You know, yesterday Jason Williams expressed, you know, in some of the sound bites that he deserves to be in Angola. He's going to ask for him to be in Angola. Is that, you know, does he go there? Does he go to another one of the prisons that maybe is better facilitated for a 93-year-old with some of the, some of the dementia issues that he's, you know, on the record to have? That remains to be seen. What I think is, I hope is not lost in the moment, depending on where he ends up, is just, I think at some point, probably 5-6 years ago, right, it went from like, there's no way that this, it seemed like it would be difficult that they would ever do anything against him. Did, did he kind of like beat out the clock? I know he repeatedly expressed some of our earlier reporting, as we discussed, you know, like the depositions and the confession that the church tried to hide, and what she basically admitted to being a serial child molester. You know, the idea of in his files, right? The idea that he's like, I tried to beat the system. He was hoping that he could beat the system. I mean, he didn't, right? He will, as my colleague David Hammer said on his on the special that they WWL aired earlier in December, is that, I mean, he will die a convicted child rapist, and he will primarily be remembered for that and not for, you know, the clerical career that he had here in the city.
Let me wrap it up with this. We only have 2 minutes, less than a minute, but Dave Cohen, I might run a minute long here. In civil litigation stemming from his abuse of another victim, Hecker gave a private deposition in which he elaborated on how his church superior shielded him from being exposed and actually allowed him to be in a position where he could prey on other children. And I guess the thing I would leave with today, Ramona, or wrap up with is, this is one priest. This is one accused pedophile, one convicted pedophile priest, admitted pedophile priest among God knows how many. And these are, I don't know how many victims yesterday testified among God knows how many victims. How does this move forward? Where does this go from here?
So there's a state police investigation that this case sort of spurred on. And obviously it's broader. I know that investigation is ongoing. Yesterday, we heard the district attorney say that, you know, Hecker's enablers, and they go from middle managers to the very top, right? And not necessarily the one, including the one currently in place, but, you know, his three predecessors have all been under investigation as to whether they're, you know, what actions they took, what they knew, when they knew it, what did they do about it, and does that amount to something that broke the law, and I think the question becomes, and this is what he said, that sometimes your hands can be tied as far as it comes to filing deadlines, statutes of limitation. Certainly, I think yesterday the DA Williams like summed it up when he said that, you know, they, something like what Lawrence Hecker was charged with, right, raping a child, there is no statute of limitation to that. Failing to adequately report him before that, sometimes it can have a statute of limitation. It just remains to be seen. I know that investigation is ongoing. I know, I think that the people in charge of the investigation have shown that if there is a crime that is prosecutable, they have the wherewithal to pursue it. But it just remains to be seen kind of what they find, and if what they find, they found it in time to be able to do something about it.
Ramon, I just got to ask you, Dave, I'm sorry we're late. We're a minute later, Dave Cohen. But you know, you're a reporter. You've been following this. Did it at any point, just the gravity of this whole thing just hit you when you realized the magnitude of how many people were involved in this and this being the case study of it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's hit me repeatedly. I think yesterday was like a new experience, as far as, I think, when I was trying to go to sleep and I didn't sleep at all. You know, realizing, you know, just the images of what happened that day, but then just realizing the years long process. And it's like I think that like what I come away with is what everybody was saying, is that it was a historic moment. I think ultimately for the abuse survivors community, yesterday was momentous, in that, you know, it was a life sentence. And I think a lot of themselves see themselves represented. No, my abuser couldn't be here because they passed away or because they beat the system. But feeling something, like feeling a stake in the events of yesterday. But at the same time, I think that like it becomes pretty quickly dawning when you realize like how many people did enable him and how many people did not get held accountable for doing that at this point.
Thank you.
It gets daunting. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Sorry, I really do. Dave Cohen, I'm sorry we're late. Here's WWL First News.